Good afternoon, everyone. It's nice to see all of you. Welcome to our guests. It's nice to have some guests here. I'm starting my message today with a story. This is it's a story we've all probably heard in some form or another. I just want to make a disclaimer. I don't believe in what I'm about to say. It's just culturally, you know, we have stories about genies. So I thought I would start my message today about a genie, but I don't believe in genies and bottles. Just wanted to put that disclaimer out there. All right, so now with that, the introduction. So a sports fan was rummaging around in his attic, and he found an old lamp. And of course, you know, it was dusty, and you know how the story goes. He had to rub the dust off, and not to any surprise by him, because he's heard this story before, a genie pops out. And of course, the genie says, "Okay, I have a wish for you. You can wish for anything. But there's one restriction. You cannot wish to live forever." Sports fan was, he really wanted to live forever. So that was the first thing on his mind as soon as the genie pops out. And he was just thinking, what am I going to do? I really want to live forever. How can I do this? So all of a sudden the idea popped into his head and he said to the genie, "All right, I will not wish forever. I will just wish that I live until the city of Cleveland has a professional sports team win a championship." Now, it's been since 1964 that Cleveland has had a championship. This is the longest for any city with major sports. Cleveland has basketball, football, and baseball, and they have three chances every year and have not won since 1964. Their basketball team's pretty good. Maybe that'll be their chance, but sportsman got the genie on that one, maybe. Well, so getting a little closer to my message, Solomon had something not quite the same, but Solomon had this opportunity to ask for anything that he wanted. Solomon was at the beginning of his reign of all of Israel, and he knew that it was a huge responsibility to be leading this nation of God, to be leading Israel. He also knew that he was just a man, and he had a lot of limitations. So he chose, and what he asked for God was almost the perfect thing, or maybe even the perfect thing he could have asked for, which was wisdom. Because he knew he needed that wisdom to lead Israel because of the huge responsibility it was and because of where he was as a person. We also need wisdom, and I want us to read about that in Matthew chapter 10 and verse 16. Let's read there, Matthew 10 and verse 16. This is, again, where Christ is telling us that we need wisdom. Matthew 10 and verse 16 says, "Behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Therefore, be wise as serpents and harmless as doves." So here it says we need to be wise as servants because we are being sent out into the world that's full of wolves. I won't turn there, but in Ephesians 6 and 12, verse 12 through 13 says, "We are wrestling against principalities, powers, rulers of darkness, and the spirits of hosts of wickedness." You know, we are in a battle. We're in a battle with Satan. We're in a battle with this world, and we're in a battle with ourselves. We need to seek wisdom, just as Christ tells us to do, to be wise. That's my subject for today. So I won't go through too much definition. We know what wisdom is, but just as a little bit of a reminder to set the stage and kind of put you in the right mind frame of what is wisdom. There's a quote I saw. It said, the wise do as much as they should, not as much as they can. And this was really striking to me. Isn't this God? God can do anything. He has all power. And yet, he doesn't always use it. You know, it's kind of back to this verse that says, be as wise as servants and harmless as doves. So wisdom is being able to do things, but choosing when to do them and when not. I mean, you think about when we're driving and somebody is in front of you, maybe they're driving slow, and we want them to move out of our way. We don't have the power to move them out of our way, but if we did have that power, would we use it wisely? I'm not sure. Before we get that power, which we will have someday, we need to increase in wisdom. And as this quote was saying, we need to do as much as we should, not as much as we can. You know, it's like, you know, again, wisdom is, it's like knowing how to use knowledge. You think about a tool, maybe some shop tools, hammers, saws, maybe even a, a lathe. I know how to use most of the tools. I can use a hammer. I can hammer a nail. I can use a saw to cut something. So I have a little bit of knowledge about these things, but I cannot use these to make some fine craftsman furniture. The same set of tools that I might kind of know how to use, a craftsman would know how to build something beautiful with that. It's a little bit of a difference between wisdom and knowledge. You know, it's an application of what you've learned. My youngest kids have been learning how to divide. So division is a skill. It's some knowledge. How do you divide two numbers? But then they say, why do I need to do this? That's where wisdom comes in, is when do you apply that? I happened to be at the store the other day and was looking at, I had two choices. I could buy this block of cheese or this block of cheese. And I used division to figure out which was the right one, because there were a different amount of cheese for a different amount of money. So I wanted to decide which was the better one. So I applied my knowledge of division to make a decision. There's another quote. It's from somebody named Maurice Switzer. Never heard of this person, but it's a pretty good quote. I've heard it. Maybe you've all have heard it in some form or another. It says, it's better to remain silent at the risk of being thought a fool than to talk and remove all doubt of it. It's a pretty good one. So, you know, an attribute of wisdom is often not talking. So today what I want to do with that introduction is go through several keys on wisdom and, you know, keys on seeking wisdom. So I'll start with start at the beginning, which is we need to know our place, which ties to humility. Wisdom begins with humility. Socrates was reportedly said, the only true wisdom is knowing that you know nothing. In the play from William Shakespeare, As You Like It, says, the fool doth think he is wise, but the wise man knows himself to be a fool. You know, humility is the beginning of wisdom. If we're humble, we will listen. We'll listen to God, we'll listen to others. By being humble, we know that there's more that we need to learn. It's just like with Solomon. Solomon could have thought, I grew up, you know, my dad was a king, I know everything, I don't need wisdom. But he didn't. He knew he needed help. This is where humility is really the first key to wisdom. Let's look in a verse in Psalms 25, speaking of Solomon's father. Psalms 25:9. Let's read a verse there on humility and wisdom. Psalms 25 and verse 9. Here it says, the humble he guides in justice, and the humble he teaches his way. So if we are humble, we can be guided by God, and we can be taught. Typically in these, you've heard of 12-step programs, whether it's Alcoholics Anonymous or other kind of offshoots from that same similar theme, one of the first steps is, or maybe even the very first step, is often, you know, admitting you're wrong, admitting that you need to do something different. And that ties directly to being humble and being ready, being open to learn, being open to wisdom. Another verse, it's so short I won't have you turn there, but you should write this down. It's an incredibly powerful verse, and it surprised me when I read it this week as preparing for this message. It really stood out to me. I hadn't really even noticed it before. But this is John 3, verse 30. It's such a short, simple verse, but it's incredibly powerful. Seven words, I think it is. John the Baptist is talking, and he says, he, referring to Jesus Christ, he says, he must increase, I must decrease. You know, John the Baptist, you know, who was he? Mr. Kester referred to him a little bit, so we know a little bit about him. He was famous, right? He had a following. People followed him, wanted to come see him. He was a little bit like a star, right? A little bit like a sports star or rock star. People came to him. He could have developed an attitude like, look at all these people that are following me. But he had this right attitude. He said, he must decrease. And on the other side of that, allow Jesus to increase. You know, another point, we know this, but John the Baptist said that he was not even worthy to carry Christ's sandals. So for us to seek wisdom, one key is we must decrease. We can decrease by changing our attitude and becoming humble. And we increase God in our lives through the studying of his word and his law. Let's read about this in 1 Corinthians, or is that 1 Corinthians? I don't think we'll be going to 2 Corinthians, but I'll be ready for that one if we do. Catch up on your current events if you missed that one. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, and we're going to read 18 through 21 and then skip down to verse 25. So 1 Corinthians 1, 18 to 21, verse 25, and we're going to read about God's greatness in wisdom compared to that of man. Verse 18 says, "For the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God." Verse 19, "For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise and bring to nothing the understanding of the prudent. Where is the wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the disputer of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since in the wisdom of the God, the world through wisdom did not know God, it pleased God through the foolishness of the message preached to save those who believe." And then skipping down to verse 25, it says, "Because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, but the weakness of God is stronger than men." So the second key that I have on seeking wisdom is using God's law as the basis for knowledge. Let's read a couple verses here on this, so and both coming from Psalms. So Psalms 19, verse 7. This is a verse that I can relate to. I feel like I can relate to. Psalm 19, verse 7. Here it says, "The law of God is perfect, converting the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple." This verse gives me hope. This verse gives the simple hope. Now, what's interesting, though, I think many of us, probably including myself, would say, you know, we're simple. But do we really have that attitude? And this kind of comes back to the humility. We got to make sure that we really are taking this simple, humble approach. And if we do, we can become wise through God. And next verse I want to go to is Psalms 111, verse 10. This is one of the top verses for many people in the Bible, one of the favorite verses, and I've got another one coming up in a few minutes as well. I love it when these very, very good verses play into the messages. I always try to put them into my message, even if they don't fit, but it works even better when they fit with the context. So we're going to read this awesome verse here, Psalms 111, verse 10. Verse 10 says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. A good understanding have all those who do his commandments. His praise endures forever." You know, so again, here it is. The fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. So if we have the right attitude and we can approach God to learn, he will teach us. And this is where we need to go for learning. There have been many people, many brilliant people throughout history. I've mentioned Socrates. Actually, I'll mention him again in a few minutes. But Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, you know, these people, many others, are considered great thinkers in the world. But they have no anchor, no basis for their wisdom. Think about Socrates. I think he lived about 500 years before Christ. I just wonder, did he have any exposure at all to the law of God? It's possible he did, but he may not have. And he did all his thinking, and he and then his students, Aristotle and Plato, have had huge influence on the world. And they were very, very intelligent people. But the big problem with that is they had no basis for their wisdom. You know, what is the difference between them, these great thinkers and followers of Christ? Intellectually, I don't think most of us, maybe some of you are an exception, but I certainly would stand no chance in an intellectual battle with these people. But they depend on their own wisdom, whereas Christians depend on the wisdom of God. And if we think about what we just read in verse 25 of 1 Corinthians 1, the foolishness of God is wiser than men. So no matter how smart these people are, they're foolish to God. They're nothing. And if we want to depend on our wisdom from men, we are be very, very limited. So again, a second key here is that we need to use God's law, and the fear of God is a basis for seeking wisdom. Through that, it's almost limitless what we can learn and how wise we can be. The third key I have is desire. We're focusing on getting wisdom. And we're told in different places to seek wisdom. This isn't some passive thing that we just kind of say, okay, I want to be wise. This is something we have to go after. We have to ask for it. We have to have some desire for it. A couple of verses on this. First is in James 1 and verse 5. James 1 verse 5. So we know James, I'll use this chapter, this book a few times. It's the book of action, right? So it's what are you doing about what we've learned? James 1 verse 5 says, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, he who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to him. So we need to have a desire for wisdom. We need to go to God and ask him for wisdom. We have to be an active participant as we seek wisdom. So this story I have, another story, it was attributed to Socrates. I was just kind of checking it out to see if it came up anywhere else. I've seen it without the name, without referring to Socrates, but whether it's him or not, it's not important. But listen to the story with respect to desiring wisdom. So there's a story of a proud young man who came to Socrates asking for knowledge. He walked up to the philosopher and said, "O great Socrates, I come to you for knowledge." In response, Socrates led the young man through the streets to the sea and chest deep into water, and then he asked the man, "Now tell me what you want." "Knowledge, O wise Socrates," said the young man with a smile. Socrates put his hands on the man's shoulders and pushed him under the water. 30 seconds later, the wise philosopher lifted the pupil out of the water. So he's been underwater for 30 seconds. Don't worry, this has a happy ending. "What is it again that you want?" Socrates asked the young man. And again he says, "Wisdom. I want wisdom, O Socrates," he said, somewhat laboring to breathe as he'd just come out of water. Socrates again took the man and held him underwater, this time longer, 30 seconds, 35, 40, 45. Finally, Socrates let him out. The man gasped for air as Socrates asked him again, "What do you want?" He labored to answer, out of breath. He says, "Knowledge, O wise and wonderful." To this response, Socrates then plunged the man underwater a third time, this time holding him close to a minute underwater. So the young man came out panting for oxygen. Socrates asked him, "What do you want?" "Air, air." The man screamed for air. Socrates said, "When you desire wisdom, just as if you have just desired for air, then you will have it." This is an illustration of how this young man, how Socrates was trying to teach this lesson. You can't just ask for something. You have to have this strong desire to get it. You know, this is how we should be seeking godly wisdom. You know, when we read about Christ being the bread of life, this is how we have to go after Christ, as if we need it for our life, which we do. So seek godly wisdom with strong desire. You know, in Ecclesiastes, Solomon tells us that he applied his heart to wisdom. You know, we hear the story at the beginning of Solomon's reign where he asked for wisdom and God gave it to him. What I wonder is, part of the gift that God gave him was not just wisdom, but the desire for more wisdom. Because Solomon tells us that he studied and he learned and he sought after and set his heart to know knowledge. So I think he also, not only was he given wisdom by God, but I think he must have also been given a strong desire to continue to grow in wisdom. Let's read one more verse on this section. It's Colossians chapter 1, verse 9. Here again, this is when this within the context of desiring and seeking wisdom. Colossians 1, verse 9. Says, "For this reason we also, since the day we heard it, do not cease to pray for you, and that you ask and to ask that you be filled with the knowledge of his will in all wisdom and spiritual understanding." So here Paul is praying for the people in Colossians. We should be praying for wisdom. We should have this strong desire to gain wisdom. By doing this, if we have this strong desire to follow God's law, God will increase in us and we will gain wisdom. The next key I have, it's number 4, is seek counsel. By seeking counsel, we can gain wisdom. And I want to read from 1 Kings 12, verses 6 through 11 on this. This is an interesting example because it tells us a lot about counsel. It tells us that we should seek counsel, but it also tells us what type of counsel we should be seeking. This is the story of King Rehoboam when he first becomes king of Israel. So let's read here, 1 Kings 12, 6 through 11. Starting in verse 6, it says, "Then King Rehoboam consulted the elders who stood before his father Solomon while he still lived and said, 'How do you advise me to answer these people?'" So the context, by the way, is Rehoboam's just become king, and the people led by Jeroboam come to King Rehoboam and say, "Look, things have not been going well. We have lots of problems. We need something different. Solomon was not treating us well. What are you going to do about this?" And King Rehoboam takes the first right step. He seeks counsel. He seeks counsel from the elders. And then what do they say? The elders in verse 7, they spoke to him, "If you will be a servant to these people today and serve them and answer them and speak good words to them, then they will be your servants forever." So there's wise counsel. And you can see in this verse from the elders, there's an element of humility here, because he's telling them to serve his people, and that's what a king should be doing. So Rehoboam, what did he do? We know the story, but let's read through it. Verse 8, "But he rejected the advice which the elders had given him, and then consulted the young men who'd grown with him and who stood with him. And he said to them, 'What advice should you give? How should we answer the people who have spoken?'" And we can continue on, but I'll skip the rest of it. You know the story. The young men told him, make the burdens heavier. You know, it says, "Think in the end, my little finger is thicker than your father's waist." So here, Rehoboam did seek counsel, and he actually had an opportunity. This was a pivotal point in his kingship. He had the opportunity to apply wisdom and to do the right thing, but he chose the wrong kind of counsel. So, you know, the key point, I said seek counsel, but the key point is seek wise counsel, whether it's coming from God, which is always wise counsel, of course, but even coming from others, we have the opportunity to get wise counsel from others. Another, maybe a bad example of seeking counsel, I learned when I first joined Tektronix. I was an engineer, and as I was meeting various people, and I kept running into engineers who used to be managers. And I should have learned, if you're an engineer, stay an engineer, don't be a manager. But I did not follow their counsel, and I become a manager. Actually, I have a good job. I enjoy my job, but it was interesting. I could have learned from that. Another thing I learned, there was one engineer who sat, his cubicle was right next to me. He was a very wise man within a certain respect, certainly not in godly wisdom. But his wisdom was in knowing where the free food was. He always knew where to find the donuts or the cookies or the cake that was left over from some team meeting. And in fact, just this week, one of my employees moved away, and so I had we had some cookies and a little bit of celebration, and he went away. And this particular engineer, I haven't seen him in a while, but sure enough, there he shows up. So I learned from him, there's food around, and watch him, he'll find it. Actually, the same engineer had a coffee mug, I don't know if he still has it, but it has something to do with counseling, seeking counsel. It was a cup that had a picture, a coffee mug that had a picture of Isaac Newton. And it had a quote from him, and so in this, it says Isaac Newton is saying, "If I have seen further than others, it is by standing upon the shoulders of giants." So again, I messed that up a little bit. "If I've seen further than others, it is by standing upon the shoulders of giants." There's wisdom here in this. There's actually a couple elements. Isaac Newton, one of the brilliant men who's ever lived, you know, he could have said, "If I've seen further, it's because I was so smart. If I've seen further, it's because of all that I studied." But he said, "If I've seen further, it's because of those others who've helped me." So there's a little bit of humility in this. And then certainly using what he learned from others to see further. It's a pretty good quote. I remember that and like it. So again, we got to seek counsel from God and from fellow Christians. And one of the things you have to be able to do to seek counsel, from whether it's from God or from others, is you have to develop a close relationship. If you have no relationship with God, or if you have no relationship with someone else, how can you get counsel from them? So developing this deep relationship, you can pray, you can ask God, you can talk to God about wisdom. You can talk to your fellow Christians about wisdom or your pastor about wisdom. I remember a sermon Mr. Joel Meeker gave maybe 6 months or so ago. It was played here, and he was talking about his trip to Africa. And in his in the sermon, he talked about how after his message, people came up to him and just asked questions, all sorts of questions. They just kept asking questions. And Mr. Meeker, I think, kind of turned it around on us and said, when was the last time you asked a question of your pastor? This is something we should be doing. To help with that, I came up with some questions. Now, unfortunately, Mr. Pinelli's not here, so we'll have to wait till he comes back. I have a few questions that I wanted we could ask. And actually, I have these printed out. If you like some of these questions and you want to remember them, I have copies. Some of the questions you could ask him, and in fact, it was a conversation we've been having recently with some of the people here. Why aren't Ephraim and Dan listed in Revelation 7? Another question came to me, which would be really appropriate at dinner. If you're at a restaurant and they're having a special on surf and turf, you may want to ask him this question. Does Genesis 9 verse 3 say that all moving things are food for us to eat? So, very timely with some of these questions. Another thing timely is especially if he's standing next to his wife. You may want to ask him about 1 Corinthians 11 verses 5 and 6, which says that women should have their head covered when praying. So what does that mean? Should that happen? You may also want to ask him another question. In 1 Corinthians, doesn't Paul say that we really shouldn't get married? If you want a philosophical question, you could ask him about Proverbs 24, 5, and 6. Should we answer a fool or not? I just don't know. It says yes, it says no. Can you help me here? I talked about Rehoboam earlier. You know, if we read in verse 15, and this actually may apply to Judas as well, but did Rehoboam actually have a choice? Was it destined for Rehoboam to do the wrong thing and have Israel and Judah split? Because it's not clear. So did Rehoboam really have a choice? So there's just a few questions. Now, these may not be directly related to wisdom. Maybe they are. But the point is, we should be talking to people, whether it's our pastor or elders or others, to gain wisdom. This was the point number four. Moving on, I didn't tell you ahead of time how many points. I didn't want to, how many keys I had. I didn't want to, you know, keeping score too much. But I think it's only fair I'll share with you that I have seven keys. So now we're on number five, just to give you an idea. Number five is meditate. Meditate. So I mentioned I had two verses that I really wanted to read in this, and it fits well, but it's just such a powerful verse. It's Psalms 119, verses 97 and 98. I think we all know this verse. If you don't know, just from the reference, you'll know it when you get there. Psalm 119, 97 and 98. So the key to wisdom that I have here, the fifth key is on meditation. 97 starts, "Oh, how I love thy law. It is my meditation all the day. You, through your commandments, make me wiser than your enemies, for they are ever with me." You know, so in this psalm, you know, it's meditation all day. And then again, it's not just meditation. It's not, you know, the meditation that frees your mind. It's focused thinking. It's meditating on something. It's meditating, in this case, on God's law and how the writer of this loved God's law. So meditation is key. And again, it's not this kind of meditation that we might hear about where you're supposed to put everything out of your mind. Meditation is really needs to be focused thinking on your problem or whatever it is, whatever area you want to gain wisdom in. You should be thinking very focused on that. David probably could have had a nickname of the great meditator, because as you read through some of his psalms, he talks about how he meditated. You know the story of his life, how he grew up as a shepherd and probably spent quite a bit of time meditating. And he talks about in some of his psalms, one of them, Psalms 1 and verse 2 says, "But his delight is in the law of God, and in his law he meditates day and night." So David gained tremendous amount of wisdom by meditating on God's law. Other people meditated in the Bible. Isaac was said to, Isaac in Genesis chapter 24 meditated. He went out in the field and meditated as if it was a normal thing that he did. I don't know. It just seems so hard to take time and just think, but this is something that we're told to do, and we have examples, like I said, of Isaac. He went out in the field and meditated. I tried to pass this up, but I just couldn't. This was cigarettes are mentioned in the Bible. I don't know if you ever knew this. We're kind of wondering, is it okay to smoke? What does the Bible say? If you read the King James Version, we realize that Isaac went out into the field to meditate. Then he saw his wife coming on a caravan of camels. His wife was rather nervous, and so what she did was she lighted off a camel. It's there. Studies including MRIs before and after meditation show a difference in brain activity. These indicate that meditation can lower stress, increase focus, strengthen memory, enhance creativity, literally add gray matter, and even increase compassion. Meditation reportedly reinforces the connections between brain cells. You know, so science, we have a lot of very smart people that sometimes they get things right. Oftentimes they don't. But, you know, when they are right, it's reinforcing what comes from the Bible. We know that meditation's good, and we have studies that actually show it. Another passage on this, let's read Joshua chapter 1 and verse 8. Joshua 1 and verse 8. This was a really important time in Joshua's life and really in the history of Israel. This is where Joshua is taking over as leader of Israel after Moses had died, and God is giving him instructions. In verse 8, one of these instructions has to do with meditation. Joshua 1 and verse 8, "The book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate in it day and night, that you may observe to do according to all that is written. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have good success." You know, so again, through meditation, God will increase within us, and we will gain wisdom. So with these keys, humility, seeking God's way, seeking wise counsel and meditation are various ways that we can learn wisdom. My sixth key that I want to talk about is that we need to not just know these things, but we have to put these into practice. We need to put wisdom into practice, whether it's in small things or in big things. Let's read in James 1, verses 22 through 25. James 1, 22 to 25. This is all about putting things into practice. It starts here in verse 22. But be doers of the word, and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and is not a doer, he's like a man observing his natural face in a mirror. As he observes himself and goes away, he immediately forgets what kind of man he is. But he who looks into the perfect law of liberty and continues in it, and it will not be a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the world, and this will be blessed as to what he does. So we need to put wisdom into practice into whatever we're doing. Again, wisdom is knowledge or experience put into action. And what's interesting about it is sometimes wisdom is very simple. It seems simple. It's almost common sense. Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "Common sense is genius dressed up in working clothes." So sometimes doing just the basic things, common sense, can make you be a genius or can make you look like a genius. Now, of course, there's a problem with that. I found this another quote. I'm not sure who said it, but it said, "Just because something is common sense doesn't mean it's common practice." So we need to do something about that. We need to make common sense. We need to make wisdom and godly wisdom common practice in our lives. If you think about some of the things, I tried to think about a couple things from the Bible. It's very clear, and it's easy to understand, but maybe harder to do. We're told in the Bible about mostly focused on marriage, but do not be unequally yoked. Makes perfect sense, right? But how many times does that, that's just common sense, right? But how often is that not common practice? One of the examples I thought of had to do with Samson. And it ties into some things. Samson got wise counsel from his parents. His parents said, "Take a wife from your own people." But unfortunately, Samson did not listen. And in fact, I think it was twice that he got a wife from the Philistines. I think the first one, his wife left him, if I'm remembering right, but certainly we know the second one, Delilah, and what that did to him. So again, it's common sense to take a wife and do not be unequally yoked. Samson did not do that. Another one that I thought about can often affect, I think, many of us, but we're told not to worry. We're told not to worry. How simple is that command? Seems so easy. You know, don't worry. God will take care of everything. But how hard is that for us? Don't worry seems like common sense, but it's often not common practice. So if we break this down in things in terms of what I've been talking about, don't worry. You know, it can start with humility. You know, we think about all our problems. Sometimes I think about my job, you know, this project's behind schedule. You know, revenues are behind. We're supposed to hit this sales number, and we're only at this sales number. And like, oh, I've got so many problems. This is so hard. But I try to stop and think about, really? What does this even matter? And think about all the other people who have much harder problems. You know, people are making much, much bigger decisions, whether it's rulers of countries or people in life and death situations who have to make tough decisions. So I think with a little bit of humility put into practice with respect to do not worry can be very helpful. So we can, again, put things in perspective. Going to God's Word. So again, wisdom starts with humility, at least in terms of what I've been talking about, and using God's law, God's Word, as a basis. So again, think about the things that we worry about. How important are they with respect to this overall plan? We can meditate on things knowing how powerful God is. If we have it firmly in our mind, if we know how powerful God is, do we really have to worry? If we meditate on what God has in store for us, if we read and think about, you know, the future that God has for us, how much do we really need to worry? These are things, again, just kind of a simple example. I try to put it in simple terms with respect to putting wisdom into action. So it's not just gaining the wisdom, it's putting it into action to do something in our lives to make a difference. So again, experience, another quote, experience is a wonderful thing. It enables you to recognize a mistake when you make it again. So let's avoid this. Let's avoid this by putting wisdom into action. So the final key I have, so I don't know if any of you have noticed, but I've talked about wisdom. I've gone through a number of passages throughout. I've hit on a handful or maybe even more than a handful of books of the Bible, but there's one book of the Bible that I have not gone to yet, that it seems like the very first place you would go to when you talk about wisdom. Where is that book? Does anyone kind of think in their head, what is the book that I haven't talked about? That's right. So I've intentionally skipped the book of Proverbs because I wanted to make it and some references from it as my seventh key. There are a couple places where I really needed a verse to kind of help with my point. And in Proverbs was seemingly the perfect verse, but I had to go elsewhere because I wanted to keep it as separate. I talked about using math for useful things. I used some math this week for maybe less than useful things. I was wondering how often is wisdom talked about in the book of Proverbs compared to the rest of the Bible. So I did a little math on this. Wisdom is in the New King James, if my numbers are right and my search algorithms are correct, is mentioned 231 times in the whole Bible, and 52 of those times is in the book of Proverbs. So a lot more times. I needed a little more data to prove that wisdom was talked about in Proverbs way more often. So I then found an estimate on the number of words in the Bible and the number of words in the book of Proverbs and did my math, and I found out that wisdom is mentioned at a rate in Proverbs 15 times higher than that of the rest of the Bible. So my seventh key is to gain wisdom, study the book of Proverbs. Proverbs covers a whole range of subjects, including many very practical, everyday living topics. Proverbs talks about wisdom and how important it is, and then it shows you through many, many verses on how to apply wisdom to your life. So let's go through a few verses here on wisdom in Proverbs. First of all, let's read Proverbs 11, verse 2. 11, verse 2. So my first key on wisdom was humility, and Proverbs 11:2 talks about that. Proverbs 11:2 says, "When pride comes, then comes shame, but with the humble is wisdom." So again, here we know, we see that connection between humility and wisdom. Let's look at Proverbs 2, verse 6. We'll just do some quick flipping over back and forth a few pages. Proverbs 2, verse 6, talking about God's law as the basis for wisdom. "For the Lord gives wisdom, from his mouth comes knowledge and understanding." We need to be getting our wisdom from God. That's the beginning of wisdom, the righteous wisdom that we need. Chapter 4, and we'll read verses 5 through 7. Proverbs 4, verses 5. "Get wisdom, get understanding. Do not forget nor turn away from the words of the mouth. Do not forsake her, and she will preserve you. Love her, and she will keep you. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And all you're getting, get understanding." So again here, Solomon is telling us to get wisdom. Not just try to, you know, go after it a little bit, but go get it. It's very almost forceful. And one more here. It's chapter 12 and verse 15. Verse 15, it says, "The way of the fool is right in his own eyes, but he who heeds counsel is wise." So again, seeking counsel. So, and then throughout Proverbs, there's so many examples, whether it's Solomon tells us not to drink too much, not to go after money in evil ways, or don't hang out with the wrong people. This is a key book. If you want to gain wisdom, study the book of Proverbs. So I've covered 7 keys, but really the first 5 are, I think, very important if you want to gain wisdom. It's humility. It's starting with God as the basis for wisdom. It's having a strong desire to gain wisdom. It's seeking counsel and meditation. These are the important things that I think that I could pull together in terms of seeking wisdom and gaining it. Albert Einstein said, "Two things are infinite, the universe and human stupidity." And I'm not sure about the universe. We need to fight human stupidity by seeking godly wisdom. One last anecdote I'll give. My oldest daughter reminded me of this, so I had to put it in here at her request. But there was a poster I saw somewhere. It said, knowledge is knowing that tomato is a fruit. Wisdom is knowing not to put tomato in a fruit salad. So again, there's knowledge, there's wisdom. We need wisdom. So I cannot end a message with that. I want to end with a Bible verse. I want to end by reading from the Word of God. So let's close this message with Ephesians chapter 5, verses 15 through 17. This is a call to action that I have for us today, which is to seek wisdom. Ephesians 5, starting in verse 15. "See then that you will walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be unwise, but understand what the will of the Lord is." We live in an evil world. We have a battle in our hands. We need godly wisdom to help us with these things.